Hey, Jonathan Goodman here. I have super exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, that I've been talking about forever, is almost here. This is published by HarperCollins. The president of Shopify endorsed it. The editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine endorsed it. This thing is going to blow the roofs off, and I'm asking that you please pre-order your copy today on your local Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's available. It's called The Obvious Choice. Hope you pre-order it. Hope you love it. Welcome back to the Obvious Choice Podcast. I'm here today with Ren and Amber. We have everybody back, first time. This is the beginning of what's probably going to be, to be honest, a three-part episode series where I'm actually sharing for the first time ever a reasonably deep breakdown of my philosophy towards minimalism. And it's something that's so obviously present to me. I mean, you guys laugh at me for it because, you know, I wear the same t-shirt every day, but it goes so much deeper than that. It really drives the majority of kind of how I live my life and how I make decisions. And I always figured that one day I'd write a book on it. And then what I realized is that while I think I still could write a book on it pretty easily, to be honest, I think it actually works better as a very in-depth chapter of the book that I'm writing. And so that's what I've been working hard on putting together over the last month. And I'm really excited to share this stuff with you and also get some of your feedback, because a lot of it is somewhat counterintuitive. Like, I make really idiotically ignorant decisions a lot of the time, and they don't always go well. In fact, you're going to hear about an example where like something went really poorly for me as a result of one of these decisions I made. And yet I still look at that situation as a win. So you'll see what I mean when I get to that section.
Well, I'm excited because I'm in the middle of the great and burdening at my house. So this is timely.
Yes. So you will like this a lot then, Amber. I think a lot of people need this. So, you know, it starts as all the chapters do with just a very quick intro, kind of quick hit, you know, hey, here's some intrigue. So starts with you are not the author of your life, but you can be the editor. Much of your story has already been written for you, where you're born, how you look, your natural attributes. You cannot control the start of it, and it is true that some stories are more fair than others, but you can control the end. Great editing, however, prides itself on subtraction, not addition. Okay. Last year, on December 31st, 2023, I tried to check into our flight, and there was an error that appeared. The plane is full. You can't add checked bags, it said. I called Air Transat. They told me that this kind of thing can happen, that there's nothing that they can do, and that I should have paid for checked bags in advance when I booked my tickets. So I look over to Allison, and she's sitting on one of our three suitcases, trying to zip it closed. "We're not allowed checked bags," I said. "What?" she replied. I explained the situation, and then I said, "Our two options are to book a new flight for a later date or reduce our luggage to carry on." She looked at me and she smiled and she said, "Guess I'll only be able to pack tiny outfits." Silver lining. My wife and I traveled the world with backpacks for 6 years, easily 100 flights between us. We never checked a bag. Then we had a kid and another. And we accepted that the kind of untethered exploration free from long waits in line at bag drops and luggage carousels was a thing of the past. Then last year, the night before leaving for a four-month trip to Nicaragua and Mexico, we weren't allowed to add check bags. Forced to pack our lives and to carry on again, but this time with a six-year-old and a one-year-old, we learned that all we still need can be packed into a backpack. The less secure you feel, the more you pack. Left to our own devices, you will fill your bags with unnecessary necessities. It's not because you need more stuff. It's because you're scared to be without it. Shaving down one's pack weight was a process of sloughing off one's fears, wrote Robert Moore in On Trails. Each object a person carries represents a particular fear of injury, of discomfort, of boredom, of attack. At age 61, Meredith Eberhardt, goes by the nickname the Nimblewell Nomad, started walking and never stopped, covering 34,000 miles in 15 years. In 2003, he gave all of his assets to his ex-wife and his two sons. "I tell my friends every year I've got less and less, and every year I'm a happier man," said Eberhardt. "I just wonder what it's going to be like when I don't have anything. That's the way we come, and that's the way we go. I'm just preparing for that a little in advance, I guess. Much of everything that he owns is in the blue backpack that he carries, no larger than a preschooler's. Eberhardt's extreme. You don't need to follow his lead and replace your toothbrush with a toothpick to shave off weight. Seriously. But he is a textbook example that the way to become more resilient is to live with more constraints, to pack a smaller bag. The reason you're anxious when packing that huge suitcase for a week-long vacation isn't because you're afraid that you'll forget something you need. It's because you don't know what you need in the first place. Anxiety results from too little confidence in your choices and gets ratcheted up when you introduce a myriad of distracting options. In 1974, Casio made the first digital watch, and it nailed the core features. A watch needs to tell time, have a timer, alarm, and light. It also needs to be water resistant and have a long-lasting battery. For $14, Casio nailed it. Their model F91W is beautiful in its simplicity. A while back, Allison was gifted an Apple Watch. We were paddleboarding. She asked me for the time. "Don't you have your watch on?" I said. "Yeah, but my phone's out of batteries, so it won't pair," she said. In order for her to tell the time on her $600 watch, it needed to be paired with her $1,000 phone. Both require nightly charging. I proudly wear a Casio on my wrist as a reminder to do less better, as a stand for simplicity. A reminder that the problem is rarely complicated, and in order to maximize in areas I care about, I have to pare down everything else to its simplest form. Also, it's nice checking the time without being reminded that I have 217 unread emails. One day my son asked to wear my watch to school. He lost it. I wasn't mad. He wanted to feel connected to his dad during the day. "You could be a whole lot happier if it doesn't take a whole lot to make you happy," said Meredith Eberhardt. "Not caring about needless things is wonderful." While my take on minimalism might be looked at as overly minimalistic, it's not really about giving away most things you own, although I won't stop you. And it's not about sharing occasionally used items like weed whackers with neighbors. Again, I'm not going to stop you. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to provide you frameworks for reducing the brain fog that comes from choice overload, optimizing your unique attributes, protecting your creative energy, and why freedom is being able to walk away, even if you choose to stay. Let me tell you something else about this nomad guy. This one's going to gross you the hell out, Amber. He removed his own toenails.
Don't like it. No.
So that they would irritate him much less when he walked the amount of miles that he walks. He removed his own toenails.
I mean, I understand the thought process, but no, I couldn't do that. Not even for aesthetic reasons. I'm just too much of a chicken shit.
Apparently a few of them kind of fell off anyway.
Well, that makes sense. If they were kind of on their way, then yeah, might as well.
And then he just decided to.
Most runners would get that for sure.
This is awful.
We're going to have nightmares about our toenails falling off now. Thanks.
So frustrated with your toenails. You just stop it at some point in the middle of the desert. These fucking toenails got to go. Like you're Samuel Jackson all of a sudden.
He probably didn't have nail clippers because I can't imagine that he thought that that would be like necessary. So did he like use his teeth? Oh, no. Like, what did he do? I have questions about how that
I think right. The nail clippers get left before the toothbrush becomes a toothpick.
Yeah, exactly.
They're that's further down the line.
Yeah. I know enough runners to where they're like, yeah, just let it go.
Oh, sheesh. It's another reason for me not to run.
Exactly.
Accumulation of possessions indirectly takes the steering wheel of your life, driving you down ill-advised paths. Buying more stuff inches you towards needing a house with more space, perhaps leading you outside of a city, farther away from loved ones. Owning a second car makes it easier to accept a morning commute, wasting hours of precious time a week. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy a big house or that you don't need a second car. Instead, I'm nudging you to question whether you actually need these things or whether you lazily accepted them as unnecessary necessities. If the latter, have you considered their downstream impacts? My house isn't large. We have one family area and no basement. As a result, we share space. And sometimes I hate it. Sometimes I want a place to read in peace and quiet. Literally, as I was editing the exact words of this section, here's what happened. And this is why I replaced what I originally wrote in this section. I was lying down on the only couch that we own, doing my paper edits of these words, not even of this chapter, of this exact section. And Calvin walked up and he lifted my right arm up that I was writing with. And he said, I'm coming to snuggle, even though there isn't much room. That's the best. That's the literal best.
Did your broveries explode?
Did you just say broveries?
I did. You're welcome.
Len, do you know what broveries are?
No. No.
Okay. So I'm happy that we have a small house.
Yeah.
I don't want to buy a second couch. I like that we don't have quite enough space. How sad must it be to live in a mansion so large that the warmth of your loved ones becomes diffused amongst the shadows of empty rooms? Small homes help keep families close. Similarly, we're close to our neighbors. When I close my eyes, I dream of waking up early in the morning, looking out the cathedral windows at the morning steam rising off the lake, listening to the loon calls in the distance, coffee in hand, French press ready with a refill beside me. But then I think back to the night before I wrote this section, where I sat on my across-the-street neighbor's porch, watching my two boys play hockey on their driveway with three other kids. And I can rent the place on the lake for a week. My family owns one car. We gave our second to my brother-in-law. In its place, I bought a nice bike. Downstream of that decision, we don't have the expense or worry of a second car. It's also forced me to design a life that exists within a tight perimeter of my house. On any given weekday, I'll ride a total of about 30 minutes. It's easy riding. Extend that out, though, for an 8-month year. That's 4,800 minutes. Over 10 years, I'd estimate that this one decision has led to 48,000 minutes or 33.3 consecutive days of stress-free bonus exercise, as opposed to flattening my ass in a car. Maybe your situation doesn't allow for mostly bike commuting. Maybe your work is far away, or your town's too spread out, or you're too rushed and have to drive. And maybe all of that is true. But if it is, it's true because it's downstream of previous decisions that you've made. It's possible that those decisions were forced upon you and there's nothing that you can do about it, which is totally reasonable. But I know a lot of people that could bike or walk more places. They simply never built the habit. These people are always stressed, always rushed, and not as healthy as they could otherwise be. If the weather's awful or I have to go farther away, I'll hire an Uber. The cost of paying occasionally for a ride is trivial compared to the cost of car ownership. Although, to be honest, I usually choose to take the subway even if it takes longer, because then I can read a book. Your lifestyle is downstream of your packing habits. The stuff you own ends up owning you. Choose carefully. Reassess constantly. And edit mercilessly. Have we figured out what broveries are yet?
Yes, I believe that.
Amber, play the Ask a White Woman song, please.
I don't have that one.
What? Wasn't there an Ask the White Woman song?
Ashley recorded something, but she hasn't sent me the actual file. She sent it to me in Facebook Messenger. I can't download it.
Okay. I'd like to ask a white woman.
Yes. I'm the only one present, so I assume me.
Do you know what broveries are?
Yes. It's male ovaries, which are not a real thing. But when guys get that, oh my God, I love kids so much and now I want more feeling, it's when your ovaries explode because now you want more kids because of the cuteness.
I see. When did you get that next time somebody asks you about it?
I had pieced it together in between the asking the black guy and the asking the white lady.
Good. Okay.
I think when your ovaries are removed, you go into menopause.
So 53 people live in Lilinac, Greenland. Now, to get there, I flew from Toronto to Frankfurt to Copenhagen to Kangerlussuaq to Ilulissat, followed by a 1.5-hour boat ride through an ice fjord. The trip to get there took 3 days. After some Arctic camping, and by the way, the Arctic camping was not in Ilulissat. We had to take another hour boat ride, and then we had to hike for 4 hours to get to the Arctic camping. So after this Arctic camping, when we had gotten back from it, I felt like beer. I don't think that that's too unreasonable. What kind would you like? Asked Victoria, who was our server at the lodge. Okay. Stupidity and ignorance are different things. They're not synonyms. Stupidity refers to a lack of general intelligence. Ignorance, on the other hand, is domain specific and refers to a lack of knowledge about a specific thing, issue, or topic. I'm not stupid. But when it comes to the topic of what beer to order in Greenland, I'm sure as hell ignorant. Learning to choose is hard. Learning to choose well is harder. And learning to choose well in a world of unlimited possibilities is harder still, perhaps too hard, wrote the psychologist Barry Schwartz. Americans are given 2 options for president, but 27 for pasta sauce. Our world is full of needless choices. Step one is to admit your ignorance. It's foolish to deceive yourself into thinking that you have the capacity to make an actual educated decision most of the time. Gustav is in the kitchen, right? I asked Victoria. He seems like the kind of guy who likes beer. Can you ask him what his favorite is and bring me that? Gustav was our chef for the week. Everything that he made was delicious. Also, he lives in Greenland. I am not a chef, and I do not live in Greenland. Most of my friends ordered Carlsberg because that was the only beer that they recognized on the menu. For those who don't know, Greenland is technically part of the Kingdom of Denmark. Carlsberg is a beer from Denmark. Victoria brought me a beer that I can't pronounce, and so I'm really happy that I don't have to audio narrate this book. But it's spelled Q-A-J-A-Q, space, T-U-L-U-G-A-Q. Tuhulak, Kahulak Tulugak. I butchered that. Sorry, Greenlandians who listen to this podcast.
Now I want to sing Come On Eileen, because it sounded like the Tula Rula Roo part. Yeah. Come on, Eileen.
Great song.
That's a craft beer made in a town of 1,346 people called Narsaq in Greenland. It was delicious. Legit, it was one of the best beers I've ever had in my life. So now you know what beer to order the next time you're in Greenland. Probably not that useful for your everyday life. So here's how you can use that same approach applied to a more common purchase. I have a super exciting announcement. My next book, called The Obvious Choice, is finally available for pre-order. This is my first traditionally published book, and it is by far the best thing that I've ever written. But you don't even need to listen to me. Harley Finkelstein, the literal president of Shopify, said to consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. He says, Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. There's tons of other endorsements. I won't bore you with them. But I really, really want to encourage you to pre-order the book today and not wait until it comes out to order it. And the reason for that is quite simple. When you pre-order a book on Amazon, you actually lock in the lowest ever price that it'll be. No joke, I pre-ordered a book, a different book, for about $40 not too long ago. And when the book arrived, I got refunded by Amazon for $10. Why? Because what happens is that there was one day over that entire 3-month period between when I pre-ordered it and when the book came out that the book was discounted. But because I had the book pre-ordered, I locked in the lowest ever price that Amazon will ever offer the book up until that launch. And Amazon often discounts books. So this way you don't have to watch Lock in your pre-order today. Thank you so much. Hope that you love it. Back to the pod. Okay, so I wanted to buy a bike. My needs were basic. I do about 30 minutes of riding a day, an occasional 30-kilometer or so ride with my dad. I don't do any trail riding. I don't do any Peloton-style cycling or anything like that. I guess what I'm saying is that my requirements for a bike were that it has wheels that turn. Websites and bike shops have too many goddamn options. No part of me wants to research the difference between sintered, organic, semi-metal, or NAO ceramic brake pads. Within 2 minutes of Googling what to think about when thinking about buying a bike, I entered into the ain't nobody got time for this shit phase. Because the faster I buy a bike and the fewer cognitive resources I expend in the process, the better. It's the same approach to ordering a beer in Greenland. Admit your ignorance, find a domain-specific expert, ask the right question, and default to their opinion. Step one is to find an expert, somebody obsessed with a thing you couldn't care less about. In this case, it's my dad. The man loves bikes. Next, I asked him for the one or two things to look for. Dad told me that tire size and bike weight are the most important, in addition to a ballpark cost to kind of look for. I then called the first person I could find that sold bikes. I told him my guidelines and said I want to buy a bike. The salesman sent me to a link on a website and asked me to let him know what I wanted. I clicked the link. There were about 100 bikes and customizations to choose from. So I texted him back and I asked him to pick for me. He's a bike guy. All I know is that bikes have wheels that turn. He texted me back with his choice and the link to the page with all of the specs to go over. I didn't click on the link. I didn't open the link. Instead, I called him to give him my credit card details. And he delivered the bike to my house, tuned up and ready to go for the next week. Everything about what I just described is both irresponsible and ignorant. And it didn't work out. The bike sucked. And the guy turned out to be a jerk. But you know what? I'm still happy that I didn't waste time researching the best bike. The one that I got cost $700. It still lasted me 2 seasons. Not as long as a bike should last, of course. But that's fine. Right? It happens. Most of the time, the outcome of whatever choice you make is good enough for whatever you need or want to achieve. A better product or service accomplishes the goal just as the same as something that's good enough, and you're never going to know the difference, anyone. Due diligence for almost everything that you buy is a waste of both time and energy. And sometimes you'll end up with a dud. In my case, a bad bike sold to me by a jerk. Even in worst case scenarios like this, I still consider what happened to be a win. Most people spend 10 to 20 hours researching bikes, tricking themselves into thinking that they know enough to make a smart purchase decision. In almost every case, they don't end up with a better product or save anywhere close to the amount of money commensurable to the time that they spent. And sometimes what they buy sucks, too. I bought a new bike in an hour. It took 3 phone calls and 1 text message exchange. In addition to preserving my mental energy, I also saved somewhere between 9 to 19 hours of time. Accepting that sometimes what you'll buy will suck is a trade-off that you must be willing to make. Because most of the time it won't. Most of the time what you buy will solve your problem just fine. If you were to do a full accounting, the trade-off of saving so much time on so many purchases, accepting that occasionally, but not often, you'll buy something that sucks, is a fantastic deal. It seems irresponsible to purposefully make rash decisions based on insubstantial information. I tend to think it's the other way around. I tend to think that it's irresponsible to pretend you know more than you do and waste the most precious resources that you have, your time and your energy, in an ill-fated attempt to save a few bucks or get the best when all you need is a bike with wheels that turn. There will only be a few things that you truly care about. Obsess over them. Spend your money on them. My dad with bikes. Me with junk wax Ken Griffey Jr. baseball cards. We all have our things. For everything else, don't even attempt to compare specs or find the best price. Even if you find a better thing cheaper, trading money that you can get back in exchange for time that you've lost forever is foolish. My God, 15 minutes to decide chicken or shrimp in a restaurant? Preached the pastor Stephen Furtick. I'm curious. You've been dating her 7.5 years and you can't decide if she's the one? Well, if she's not, get out the way. Do it or don't. Buy the house or don't. Sell the house or don't. Stay in Relay or don't. You can always move back. There's entire industries dedicated to making up more stuff to give us opportunities for anxiety. And then we turn around and thank them and call it options. The happiest and most successful people that I know are decisive. They make decisions. They don't look back. And they live with the consequences. The others live in a state of constant imprisonment, shackled by their own indecision. Okay, one more example of how to decide well like a minimalist. This time, about voting in a federal election. Voting's important. So is democracy. So here's where you fucking cancel me. The electoral process is idiotic.
Oh, yeah.
I would estimate that 98% of the population are ignorant towards every single issue that matters. It's not their fault. Federal governance is simply too complicated for any one person to understand, let alone a person who does not work in federal governance full time. And now that we're in the era of misinformation, the general public, myself included, doesn't stand a chance. Voting should be a rational, objective, intelligent decision, but it's not. It's driven by an emotional and irrational herd mentality. I don't have a solution for the sorry state of the electoral process. So perhaps it's not fair that I call it out, but I do, however, have a system for becoming a reasonably well-informed voter that won't consume a lot of your time or energy. It starts with not trying to understand everything about politics come election time. Don't follow the news. Don't get distracted by scandals or duped by propaganda, and certainly don't watch the debates, which have devolved into clown shows for TV ratings, viral clips for the internet, and farm systems for memes. Ignore it all. Pretend it doesn't exist. Instead, decide on the one or two topics most important to you. For me, it's usually education or tax reform. Next, seek out the policy from each candidate on these topics. Call a local political representative from each party and ask for the specific information. Finally, if possible, call a well-informed bipartisan friend on the issues and ask pointed questions about each policy. You might also be able to find information about the policy issues that you care about, information online about the policy issues that you care about. If you do go this route, set a max time, I recommend 2 hours, and use an incognito browser window to find articles, podcasts, or videos produced by intelligent people on all sides of the political spectrum. Based on what you learn, make as educated a decision as possible on who to vote for. It's not perfect, but it's as good as you can do. It's as good as I think anybody can hope to do. Admitting your own ignorance and taking shortcuts helps you make decisions faster and with less information. It's not perfect, but it's good enough. And when there's too many things to do and know, good enough done quickly is the best that we can hope for. Am I going to get canceled?
Nah, you'll be fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we knew that it was fucked up before you talked about it.
Yeah. So earlier we were talking about like, okay, you know, buy the house or don't, or do this or don't, right? Mm-hmm. But we've also said in the past to help kind of square this up is we've said like, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. Mindset is not often appropriate. How would you kind of like make sense of that? Because those feel a little conflicting.
What part of it?
when we're saying if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no, there's always more nuance to things, right? And so we can't just kind of go based off of emotion when making decisions. But it almost, in my mind, the way that I interpret that is it creates, let me pause and consider, yes. Right? Versus either do it or don't.
Was the part that threw you off the passage from the pastor? Because the other examples that I gave were more sort of logical examples where you could follow that, like gain a baseline of information quickly by going this route,
that
getting
part
information,
is good.
Guiding it. But the part from the pastor, we talked about, you know, buy the house or don't, sell the house or don't, stay there.
Yes, that's what's throwing me off. Yeah. So if they remember that, I'm wondering if that might be a thing for, they would have to consume a lot of our stuff to recognize that I'm here, you know, 98% of the time. So that may not be an issue for anyone else, but that was my first kind of thought.
I will keep that in mind. I like the quote because it's powerful,
mm-hmm.
But you're right. And this is the qualm that I have with a lot of the religion forward stuff that I listen to and consume, is that I actually say this later on, you know, anytime somebody says the word God, you can just sub in either words, us or hope. And anytime they say the word devil, you can just sub in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time that's fine, but some of the time what I've noticed is that it seems to be a very lazy way to give self-development advice, where at the end of it, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, that was powerful, I'm jazzed up, but then I'm like, but I actually have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is, that passage is actually, now that I look at it again, is kind of one of them. Where do it or don't. It's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean that it's like smart that you do it or not. Whereas I'm trying to give frameworks for how to make better decisions quicker. He's basically like, just follow your gut, bro. God's got a plan for you. And it's like, yeah. Telling me that God's got a plan for me, it doesn't really put my lizard brain at ease.
Yeah. Especially if I'm supposed to be editing my own life at the same time. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I might cut that out.
If I may interject.
You may, yes.
I am giving up on the idea that there is such a thing as a right decision. That's where I think the error comes in. I think there's a right decision fallacy. I just think they're decisions. I think at this point in my life, I'm more concerned with making decision more quickly and then making decision right on the other side of it with my effort. Whatever, yeah. I choose. I'm just not sure that there is a wrong or right decision. I think it's something that we've been inundated with to delay decision. Because the only wrong decision that I've ever encountered so far is delayed decision. Because I don't give my life the opportunity to move forward at a pace that it should. And so many people are stuck in the place that they are because they're indecisive based on the fact that they believe that there is a right decision to make. And I don't know if I believe that anymore.
You have to give up something. Like there's in the ADHD groups that I'm in, like decision paralysis is a really big problem. And so I was in this discussion about like the problem is that you're afraid of losing something, no matter what decision you make, you're having to give something up and you're never going to know what that thing is. So no matter what you're going to feel like you've made the wrong decision because of FOMO and the unknown.
Sounds like Amber listened to one of our episodes that we recorded together that she wasn't at, right?
Sounds like it. I don't know why she would do that.
It was the philosophical term for that, Amber, is uncompensated loss.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to ask you what would you prefer, $50 or $100? The answer is obvious. You would choose $100 because the two things are close enough to be able to be compared.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of decisions that we make, you know, do one thing or don't do anything, you know, move in this direction, move in that direction, whatever it is, you can't compare the two. And so as a result, no matter what, even if things work out, there's always going to be what's called uncompensated loss on the other side. And that can be very hard to overcome. That was in the last chapter, actually, near the end of it, I think.
deliberating on a decision. It's like pausing a really great movie because you don't know how it ends. Like, I don't get that. Like, if I don't let the movie go forward, I don't get to see what happens next. I feel the same way about decisions. I just want my movie to move along. Like, I just want to get the full extent of the story. And if I deliberate, I never get to the story. Like, I never get to the thing that moves life along. I'm just trying to make the right decision. Oh, pause it. It's really good. I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the movie, but I don't want to watch it. Like, what? Huh? Make it make sense. Like, I don't get that. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I love that. I'm writing it down. Delaying a decision is like pausing a really great movie because you don't know how it ends. I just want my movie to move forward, man.
I just want to see the rest of it. They already got my money. I'm out of popcorn, obviously. I ate that during the previews.
Every time.
And the Twizzler pack was open. I don't know if somebody tampered with this or not.
I ate all my popcorn during the previews.
Yeah. Not only am I already in the seat, I can't leave. I can't leave the theater. I'm permitted from leaving the theater. I'm just going to sit there with it on pause until I
die.
That little piece
of the story just makes it, you know, I already ate all the popcorn during the previews. I'm kind of stuck here now.
We all did. We obviously all did. I don't know. I've never met a human that sits down with their popcorn and waits for the movie to start to eat it. That's psychopath.
You're a psychopath. The Marvel sign comes
yeah.
up on the.
Nah, I'm not waiting on that. That popcorn's gone. By the time I see the third remake movie from my childhood previewed, popcorn's gone.
Because why the fuck not, right?
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Well, thank you for listening. I'm excited to get in deeper on my whole philosophies towards minimalism in the coming episodes as well. This is something that is very near and dear to me. Probably the single facet of my life philosophically that I adhere to every single day that has made my day to day much better. And you can see, as you heard from this episode, like it doesn't always work out well. I still consider that a good thing. And I think that's very important to keep in mind is that a lot of the time when you make decisions rashly without enough information, things won't go well. But sometimes also when you make information slowly or when you make decisions slowly with all the information in the world, it also doesn't work out well. The difference between the two is that in the latter, you've wasted a lot of time making that decision, time you're never going to be able to get back. So, okay, I'm going to recommend an episode that's completely different than this for no other reason than it was already open in my browser, and I'm not going to try to find another one because I was like, that was a good episode. So here it is, episode 60, check that out. It's called The One About Content, episode 60, and talked about the four stages of content progression, talked about where content comes in, where it doesn't come in, how to think about it to not be so goddamn overwhelmed by content and have it actually work for you instead of you working for it. That's episode 60. Enjoy. Love you long time. Bye-bye. Goodman out.